This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Yeah, the vehicle data is fascinating, and I know they're talking about it literally as we're talking here. I don't know if we're going to see this or not, but I mean, these vehicles, they have incredible, you know, sensors on them. They'll, I mean, where, you know, it'll beep at you if a squirrel runs too close sometimes. Are we going to see anything on these vehicle, on this vehicle data that we did not see last time that shows any sort of strike to the vehicle? I would think that if there's data, maybe that would be there. I don't know.
Oh, we are. I think this time.
Yeah.
Remember the first time they did not have the person who evaluated it.
Mm-hmm.
While they were an overall expert, they weren't an expert specifically on the Lexus.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to call it the black box, that vehicle information. And we're being told, oh, they have so much more information that they've gleaned. And there was something that I saw in Alan Jackson's opening statement, where he says they both got out of the vehicle. And I thought that was very interesting. It was the first time I heard it. Some people are saying, oh, it was a slip. He was just talking and he didn't mean to say they got out of the vehicle.
Yeah.
But Alan Jackson doesn't normally slip on something as important as that detail.
Yeah.
He certainly doesn't allow his witnesses to slip on anything that when they speak. But my point was, does he know something we don't in terms of did her door ever open? So I'm really watching intently because we know Brennan has kept a lot secret, right? That he's throwing in there that we haven't seen before. And I keep wondering, wow, did she get out after the strike? If she got out after the strike and that door opened, to me, it's a game over situation. It's, you know, just drop the mic. It's the linchpin because that would show, it would match up with her words about he didn't look mortally wounded. I don't know if that happened.
Yeah.
All I can tell you is what Alan Jackson said.
That would be, that would be the end of it. Because that's where you get second degree, where if she realizes that she hit him. And that's where the mortally wounded line comes in. Didn't look mortally wounded. That would tell you that she did see him on the ground or something, maybe stumbling around and thinking, oh, he's fine. That shows she was conscious of his state of being after something happened to him. Maybe she didn't know what happened to him. Maybe she thought he slipped. Maybe he did slip. Maybe that is what happened. And she saw him kind of stumbling around, but thought, oh, he's drunk. He didn't look mortally wounded. He's going to get in the house, and she leaves. That, along with the vehicle data that's going to show timestamps, because we have various, you know, accounts from Karen of sitting there for, you know, 2 minutes, 10 minutes, all different time windows. That's going to, somewhere it's going to contradict because it can't be all of them at once.
Yeah, she's contradicted herself, but the jury hasn't seen all the contradictions yet.
Yeah.
But the minute that vehicle data comes in, I think they will play a clip of her contradicting herself. I would expect that to happen.
Yeah.
Also, Tony, on that vehicle data, did she go back? Remember, that was basically indicated, but they didn't have that vehicle proof. If they've been able to delve further into that box, did she ever go back in? Because why would she tell Kerry Roberts he's dead?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, unless it's just that frantic. I mean, because I can see both things on that. If you're still drunk, because she was, with the high tolerance, and you're freaking out and you don't know where your significant other is. I mean, I can get where you're going to say every variation of what the worst case scenario could be, where you catastrophize it. You know, he's dead. He could be dead. I wonder if, all of it, because I'm sure it's all come out. So I can get where those statements would be made, and they're not necessarily a confession, but they're certainly possible consciousness of guilt or just paranoia of what possibly could have happened to him when you're running every scenario through your mind. But if you saw him get into the house, which she claims she did, why would you have those thoughts?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You would never think that if truly, as in one version, she said she saw him sneak his head in the, like a raccoon,
yeah,
she pointed out, peek around the window frame.
Yeah.
why, or the door frame, why in the world would she be checking or even think that she could have hit him? That's why I say she knows what happened.
That's
for all those reasons.
That's very true, because when you look at it in hindsight, you always got to look at, okay, what happened at what point? And the fact that she's freaking out, John's not answering his phone, they've been drinking all night, and it's still very early in the morning. A lot of times when people drink, they sleep in a bit because they're trying to sleep off the booze. I think I'd be thinking he's probably on, you know, somebody's couch somewhere or wherever, not home. Nobody, because I'd be thinking, well, nobody was sober enough to drive him home. So he slept on the Albert's couch or whatever it may be. You wouldn't naturally go to, he's dead. You wouldn't naturally go to, let's go check the front lawn. That would be the last thing on your mind at that moment in time, unless you know he's in the front lawn. and you didn't see him go in the house.
And I'm going to take it a step further.
Yeah.
If you think you hit him and killed him, if you think that's a possibility and he could be on the front lawn,
mm-hmm.
why in the world would you call two people you don't know?
Yeah.
That are friends of the victim? It's because you want an alibi that doesn't look like a friend giving you one.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't even have their numbers, Tony.
Yeah.
She had to confer with the niece. She had to get the niece to call.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you call them and say, come pick me up? I think John's dead, essentially. We got to go look for him.
Yeah.
I think it was such a well-played and well-planned, now I've got these two girls on the hook
mm-hmm.
so I can do the acting scene. And I'm not saying it was entirely an act, but the frantic scene of finding him because she knew she couldn't do it on her own.
Mm-hmm.
Normally a person, if they, you know, first of all, there was nothing she did normal mm-hmm. as a person, you know, drop him off. If he goes to the party, you know, and he's not answering later, you call those people, you reach out to somebody who knows them.
Yeah.
I mean, these are 40-year-old people. This is not like teenagers. They should know how to react. And you might go over to that house and knock on the door and say, hey, listen, did John spend the night last night? Because we know how she is after seeing all her text messages, right?
Yeah.
That might not be a normal, but what is totally unusual is called two people you don't know.
That, and you're exactly right. Why did she not? They pull into the house. Look, you're not going to see the body in the front yard. That's anybody who's lived in snowy environments and knows how that works. A body, you know, yay big, flat on the ground, and there's, you know, many inches of snow, you're barely going to see a bump, if anything, especially if it's blowing and windy and you got drifts and stuff going on. There may be no bump at all. And to make your first move, to run through the yard to a spot that nobody else sees anything because it's covered in snow and not go to that front door, not to go, is John in here? I'm really worried. You know, because again, I think you'd be thinking he's on someone's couch, not passed out or dead, you know, over by the flagpole. That would not be your natural point of reference or thought to go to unless you know something is there.
You're so right, Tony. It's all Occam's razor.
Yeah.
It's what all makes the logical sense. The most obvious is typically where the investigation goes. It's not always, but it certainly is in this case.
Yeah.
And it's all the pieces. Look at all the pieces we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
All the actions. And we haven't even talked about the fact that when she arrived back at John's house, that Ring camera footage is mysteriously gone. And guess who had the ability to erase it?
Mm-hmm.
Erin Reed. She ran in, and at least according to the testimony, no, she didn't run over to the kids that she had been helping care for. She didn't run over to anybody. She ran upstairs and got her things and was gone very quickly.
Mm-hmm. There's so much here. What do you think of the field trip that they took the other day to the scene? Obviously, you know, it's, you know, getting into summer or it's late spring and not at all what it would have felt like on that morning. But you get to see the distance from the house and where the road is and where everything is. What do you think the jury gleaned from that visit?
Well, you know, to me, the biggest thing is the driveway. The driveway, as you're looking at the house, is at the far right side of that house. And if you're exiting that middle door, which is where everybody went in and out of, and you're going on the sidewalk and you're headed towards your cars, there'd be no reason ever to look back over to the right, the far right, especially in the dark, freezing cold, if they're keeping that into account, the temperatures. I didn't hear at this trial, we'll see if they get somebody on to talk about how slippery and icy the sidewalk was. So people were actually looking down to keep their footing when they exited the porch area. I hope they touch on that. I think that's really important. The other thing is they're going to be able to see the vantage point from that middle door over to the lawn, and from the lawn over to the middle door. You can't see anything that way. Even if you walked out, the first thing you decided to do was stare to the right. You're not going to be able to see.
Then also, do you think it showed anything in terms of, I mean, because there's kind of a little bit of a slope there, it looks like, in terms of, you know, how that would have worked, where his head would have been to possibly make contact with her taillight, if that's indeed what happened. Do you think that the jury gleaned anything out of that?
Well, I think they did, because this time, as opposed to last trial, they parked that Lexus in the spot essentially where Karen Reed parked.
Yeah.
You know, last time they kept it up at another location closer to the driveway, as I recall.
Yeah.
I think that's helpful to the prosecution. The big thing helpful to the defense is the fact it's not dark, there's no elements, and there's no snow. Even the plowing effects of, you know, that's why his shoe wasn't found. I mean, it was under so much snow. Carrie Roberts testified she didn't even know who it was until she dug and uncovered that face. It was inches of snow. Yeah. I just hope the prosecution really drives some of these points home.
Yeah, I think they're doing a good job so far. It's going to be interesting.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. She was a doting mother, the kind who baked cookies, made the best homemade Halloween costumes, and never missed a PTA meeting. The perfect mom. Until the police found something buried in the backyard, a secret she kept for years. A secret she thought would never come to light. The neighbors gasped. Not her. She's so nice. But people forget. Monsters don't always look like monsters. Some wear aprons. Some tuck their kids in at night. And some hide their darkest deeds in places they think no one will ever look. If only someone had heard the warning signs, had recognized the patterns from an eerily similar case on Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. If they had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, they could have listened ad-free before anyone else and saved themselves from baking cookies with a serial killer. Instead, well, they won't be RSVP to this year's PTA meeting. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.